Let me start by first thanking the Bushfire CRC for inviting me to participate with this discussion. I'm humbled to be a part of it. I think it's timely that you're having this forum, and you should be commended for organizing it. Before I start, I also want to mention some feedback that I received from many of the Americans that were recently here to lend a hand in the firefighting effort that you folks have gone through. To a person, they had high praise for your warmth and your professionalism, and I want to echo that. This morning, I want to share with you some of what we're learning about the megafire phenomenon in the United States and these fires' significance in terms of rethinking the strategic direction that our wildland fire protection programs might take. What do I mean by that? I mean, what is the optimal mix between prevention and mitigation and response? The trends that we're witnessing in global warming, overaccumulated fuels and fire-prone ecosystems, and growth at the wildland-urban interface all suggest that the fire protection strategies that have served us so well in the past may not serve us so well in the future. And the megafire is becoming a powerful, powerful indicator of this concern in the U.S. In the U.S. Forest Service, our wildfire protection objective has always centered on minimizing suppression costs, resource loss, and private property damage, considering firefighter safety first. This is a critical measure of our performance. Yet despite significant increase in the fire protection budget in the U.S. Forest Service, costs and losses and damages are all on the rise, and so are fatalities. The manager has got to step back and take another look at what direction these fire protection programs are taking in this context. Our fire protection strategy has always attempted to build firefighting capacity commensurate to the values at risk. I would share with you that in the past we have been response or suppression centric. That means that the ratio of spending response versus mitigation has tilted largely towards response. Some units 10 times more, other units 100 times or more. The doctrine that's guided us has always aimed at matching increasing wildfire threat with increasing suppression force. And yet we're finding that there are limits to suppression effectiveness. The megafire tends to overwhelm us. We're finding that as good as we might get with the response, and in a minute I'll share some statistics with you, the consequences of the escapes has gotten out of hand. Most might agree that our aims and our realities are in conflict. The title of this address is The Megafire Reality, Redirecting Protection Strategies in Fire-Prone Ecosystems. The megafire phenomenon has us challenging conventional strategies and conventional doctrine. Do we reinforce tactics or do we redefine strategies? That's the juncture that we're at. Do we see the megafire phenomenon as principally a fire operations problem? That we didn't have enough dozers, that we didn't act quick enough, that we didn't run air tankers? Do we see it as a fire operations problem, an attempt to build even greater emergency response capacity? Or do we broaden our perspective and see the megafire problem in a much larger context, one that involves the management of fire-prone ecosystems and one that addresses growth behaviors at the wildland-urban interface? I want to share a little bit about America's megafire experience as I see it, and I don't want to export this experience or suggest that it applies here. I want you to draw your own conclusions about what similarities you feel might exist in the context of the bushfire threat as you see it here in Australia. In the United States, it seems clear that our fire ground, our fire environment, the world we know, seems clear that it's changing. Despite a threefold budget increase in the past 15 years and enormous firefighting capacity, the U.S. Forest Service finds itself dealing with an overall increase in wildfire acres burned per acres protected and some of the worst wildfires we've suffered in our history. And some of you know that firsthand. Never mind that of the roughly 10,000 fires that the U.S. Forest Service deals with every year, close to 99% are successfully contained at the initial or extended initial attack phase. The problem is that the 1% of fires that get away are accounting for about 95% of the total acres burned and in the neighborhood of 85% of total fire suppression-related expenditures. In the U.S., before 1987, wildfires greater than 2,000 hectares were relatively rare. They got everybody's attention. Today, that size fire doesn't even make our national SIT report. Since just 1998, we've had over 200 wildfires greater than 20,000 hectares. In 2002, five western states suffered the worst wildfires they'd ever had on record, some of those greater than 200,000 hectares. In 2003, one of those states, California, beat its own record with a fire that came to be even larger and more damaging and more destructive and more costly than the year before. It's significant because in this state, California, between local, county, state, and federal firefighting assets, their budget exceeds $3.1 billion, and that's with a B, $3.1 billion per year in preparedness or response capacity. You have to ask yourself, how much bigger would we build this fire department before we step back and ask ourselves, what direction are we taking and where is this headed? That's the juncture that we're at today in the U.S., and I sense that may be the juncture that you are here in Australia also confronting. Megafires aren't occurring due to a want in funding. In fact, the worst wildfires on record are coinciding with the highest preparedness budgets we've ever been appropriated. In 2002, the National Fire Plan outlined a way to confront the large fire program problem in the United States. In 2004, with strong bipartisan support, the Healthy Forest Restoration Act increased federal funding, streamlined some of the planning requirements for fuel reduction work, and boosted support to state-level fire programs. No one expected the problem to get fixed overnight. But large fire trends, despite these actions, continue to climb. This past year in the United States, over 3.9 million hectares burned due to wildfires. Tragically, 23 firefighters lost their lives. In 2006, suppression spending on federal lands alone exceeded $1.9 billion U.S. That's just federal lands. Doesn't include state lands, private lands. Set another new record. Among all large fires, the 20 worst, or about 0.2%, cost over $400 million U.S. to suppress. If my calculations are correct, this was the sixth year in the past decade that the worst fire season was eclipsed by one worse. A long-gone senator used to be fond of saying, you know, a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon we're talking real money. Well, we're talking real money. The fire protection strategy in America is expensive, and it promises to get even more expensive unless we step back and take another look at where it's all going. We've got to start looking at the causal factors and the contributory factors as much or more than we deal with response. It's gotten to the point where at this level of suppression funding, other work for wildlife and watersheds and forest health and recreation and all the other things that the Forest Service is mandated to do, it's gotten so expensive, this business of fighting fire, that there's not enough money to go do that work. And some are fearful that we may be headed for an awful predicament where the cost of emergency response continues to grow to the point where there's not enough money to go deal with the causal factors and mitigate the fuels that underlie the problem in the first place. Although it's difficult to confront reality, my experience has always told me it's even more difficult to move strategies to deal with new realities. It was T.S. Eliot who observed, humankind cannot bear very much reality. Judging by the amount of whiskey I might imbibe from time to time, he might have something there.